Go into any grocery store at any time of the year in the United States, and more likely than not, you'll see bananas. Lots of them, usually as one of the less expensive fruit options. Bananas have been a popular food item for years and are the main ingredient in a lot of our favorite recipes, but the future of bananas could be in jeopardy. A disease known as Fusarium wilt, a tropical race 4, has been devastating banana crops around the globe, namely in Asia, Australia, Africa, and the Middle East, but now we're seeing the first confirmed case found in the Western Hemisphere. Our next guest is here to talk about the disease and how other crops like coffee and cocoa could face similar diseases in the future. Caitlin Allen is a professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Caitlin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about this disease affecting bananas, whose name I just butchered there.
That would be Fusarium wilt.
Thank you.
It's caused by a fungus, and it kills trees quite quickly. Two important things for listeners to know. First of all, it's not dangerous to humans directly. There's nothing poisonous about diseased bananas. And the second thing is that it's not going to drive the banana extinct. The most likely outcome is that bananas are going to be more expensive, at least in the short term, and also, unhappily, that there'll be increased levels of hunger in parts of the world where people count on bananas as a staple crop.
As I understand it, we've been here before. The kind of banana we see at the store is called the Cavendish banana. It was not always our number one selection, right?
That's true. Yeah, the reason that we are facing this problem right now is that we have genetic uniformity in banana plantations around the world. This Cavendish variety, the one that we all know and love, it travels well, it has a mild flavor, it ripens predictably, it's productive back in the field, was not our first choice for large-scale banana plantations. The first choice was a variety called Gros Michel, or Big Mike, as people called it in the English-speaking world. But it was susceptible to race 1 of Fusarium. And back in the 1950s, this spread very quickly around the world, probably through infected banana cuttings, and pretty much wiped out Gros Michel. There was billions of dollars of loss. That was in 1950s dollars, so we're talking about a lot of money. And in response, the Cavendish banana was widely planted because it's resistant to Fusarium race 1. But unfortunately, it's susceptible to this new race 4.
Now, when we see a disease like this spreading in bananas, is there a way to stop it? I mean, is there any thought that, okay, we can turn the tide and save the Cavendish banana?
Maybe one question is, do we want to save the Cavendish banana? Maybe it would be nice to have more diversity. Certainly in terms of sustainable farming practices, it's better to plant a lot of different kinds of bananas. Banana production is a small margin operation, and it's controlled by relatively few multinational companies. Here I'm talking about the dessert bananas, the sweet ones like Cavendish. And because it's a small margin, those companies tend to be highly competitive and not very open to change. But if they planted a lot of different varieties, they'd have a bulwark against the disease.
You study diseases that affect a lot of different crops. Is this a common problem if we have a monoculture, we grow the same strain of whatever kind of produce and lots of it and all over the world? Are we just putting a bullseye on it for a disease that's going to spread around the world?
That's exactly right. That's the whole problem. There's a strong reason why people do large-scale monoculture. It's profitable, it's predictable, it's easy to manage. You can sell stuff in advance, and grocers know exactly what they're going to get. But, as you say, it's the all-you-can-eat buffet for a pathogen. If one banana plant in a big plantation is susceptible, since they're genetically uniform, they're clonal, they're all susceptible to the same disease. So it makes for crops that are super vulnerable. And other examples of this that have led to gigantic, disastrous epidemics in the past include the Irish potato famine, which was caused by an oomycete pathogen that attacked potato and caused late blight. And then more recently, often associated with tropical cash crop agriculture, big problems in coffee and in cacao, rubber. There's a long list. And in most cases, companies lost money, but at the local scale, the workers had much more catastrophic personal effects. So these things can have big socioeconomic impacts beyond the bottom line for shareholders.
Now let's talk about coffee. That's been in the news over the last few years. There is another pathogen attacking our world's coffee supply?
That's right. This is a fungus that causes coffee rust disease. And coffee rust has been known since it caused a catastrophic, really disastrous epidemic in the 1860s and 70s in what was then Ceylon and is now Sri Lanka. The British, who owned the island at the time, essentially planted the whole thing to coffee. And so when the rust pathogen arrived, it spread very quickly and destroyed the coffee industry there. This led to Queen Victoria's It's Patriotic to Drink Tea campaign because tea bushes replaced the coffee plantation. But then the disease has now spread, and we generally control it by spraying fungicides or by planting resistant varieties. But the resistant coffee varieties so far don't have the ideal flavor profile, the Arabica, that people really like.
Is there a common thread these days when it comes to plants at risk, when it comes to something like climate change?
That's a really good question. Certainly, as temperatures increase and as rainfall becomes more erratic, we're seeing this happening already, and it's not going to get better as climate change progresses. Plant diseases are going to become bigger problems and also less predictable. A lot of plant disease management happens because we can say, you need to control this disease in this region at this time of year with a chemical spray or some other kind of intervention. But if we don't know what the weather is going to be like, then it's much more difficult.
We're talking to Katalin Allen right now, professor with UW-Madison Department of Plant Pathology. She's with us to talk about a disease that's ruining banana crops around the world, now spotted in South America, and other plant pathogens that affect a lot of the crops we depend on, coffee, cocoa, as you heard, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about this disease that's affecting bananas, the one that's affecting coffee, about how all of this works and what we do about it? Do you think we as Americans need to reevaluate the foods that we import and eat? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, look at more possible solutions to these problems coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about a disease that's ruining banana crops and what other crops could face similar issues in the future and what to do about it. Katalin Allen is with us, professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Katalin, you mentioned one solution being, hey, maybe we need more variety, more diversity within crops like bananas. Another suggestion, another solution people are looking at is genetically modified organisms. What's out there in the research on that?
That's right, Rob. So GMOs tend to be controversial when you bring them up, but that's often because people don't fully understand the potential, the real risks and the real potential benefits. There are disease-resistant bananas, for example, Cavendish variety bananas that resist Fusarium tropical race 4. These were developed by an Australian lab, and they've been in field tests for 7 years now. I don't think they pose any human health risks, there are a number of other important plant diseases that potentially can be controlled by genetically modified organisms. It's not a process that, biologically speaking, is reasonably different from traditional crop breeding. And in the case of diseases, it reduces use of insecticides, pesticides, fungicides. So they often are much more environmentally friendly approaches. But, of course, they are controversial.
What kind of technologies are we talking about for something like bananas? Is it, okay, we're going to look at a different kind of banana or a different strain of Cavendish and move the genes from here to here? Or are they using that the CRISPR gene editing technology or both? I don't know.
Yeah. So in the case of the tropical race 4 resistant Cavendish bananas that the Australians developed, they've got two genes in them. One is from a wild banana variety, so it doesn't happen to be sexually compatible with breeding bananas is complicated. I'll just leave it at that. and the other is from a little round worm that lives naturally in the soil. And the two of them together make plants essentially immune to tropical race 4.
And I think when people hear, okay, you're transferring genes from a banana to a banana, they might not worry about that. When you're saying a gene from, say, a roundworm to a banana, people may feel less comfortable with that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where the concept is scarier than the reality. The reality turns out to be a gene that causes the plant cell to die as soon as it recognizes the presence of the fungus. And so it's like a little micro walling off. The fungus can't progress any further because the cell has died. So the only thing that the roundworm gene does is allow the response, essentially, the pulls the trigger, as it were, on a defense response that the plant already has, which is killing off a few cells so that the whole tree will live.
If we do this kind of genetic modification, but just use it to replace the Cavendish and say, okay, we're doing the new Cavendish strain and planting it everywhere we used to do Cavendish, are we just setting ourselves up for the next fungus in 2 decades?
Absolutely. So that's why the better approaches involve, if they use GMOs, involve putting the modification into a wide variety of different plants. And so one example of this is we've been talking about Cavendish, a dessert banana, but the vast majority of the world's bananas are grown for local consumption and they're cooking bananas or plantains. And those are crucial, especially in East Africa and Indonesia. They are the foundation, the potato, if you will, or the bread of people's diets. And there, the GMOs that confer resistance to various diseases have been put into a wide variety of different local types of cooking bananas in order to try to get past the problem you identify of monoculture.
So the difference there might be if we Americans lost our bananas, bummer for us. If somebody loses their staple crop, like the plantain you're talking about, that's a matter of life or death.
That's right. Another banana disease that's broken out in the last 20 years in East Africa has led to measurable major socioeconomic problems. Usually what happens is the family farm fails and the dad goes into town to try to get a job in the city. Sometimes he succeeds, sometimes not. Mom can't pay the kids' school fees anymore. Kids drop out of school. There's a whole ripple effect that's really very destructive, and also nutritional losses. At the very worst, you end up with hunger.
Talking to Caitlin Allen, professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, looking at crops around the world that are faced with threats of disease. Banana, the poster child of that right now, but it's not alone. Coffee, cocoa, and oranges, citrus fruits. Caitlin, I know you have your eye on, even here in the United States. What are we seeing with our citrus?
The citrus disease that people are really worried about right now is called citrus greening, and it arrived in Florida in about 2005, where it spread really rapidly. It's caused, and most people don't recognize this, Rob, a 70% decrease in the yield, the output of oranges from Florida. And this disease is incurable at this point, although there is a GMO that has not, of course, been approved yet that does resist it. And it is now spread into California, where so most of the oranges from Florida are made into juice, but most of our eating oranges come from the West, California, Arizona, and so forth. So at the moment, we don't have a solution for this, and we don't have wild varieties of citrus that have good resistance. This has really been a catastrophe.
We have an email from Monica who says she makes her living as a baker. Ingredients like bananas, coffee, and chocolate are really important to her work and her bottom line. Monica wants to know how she should be thinking about recipe development in the future and how she can contribute to more diverse and sustainable practices.
Oh, Monica, what a great question. I do think that flexibility, especially using local ingredients, so whether that's persimmons or cranberries or whatever Wisconsin has to offer, or just trying out a few other options, it's challenging and it requires flexibility. But we want to push this at every level. We want the growers to be more flexible and we want consumers to be more flexible too.
Thanks so much for that question, Monica. Are there pathogens, diseases out there that affect plants that could affect multiple kinds of crops? And we were talking about a banana-specific one, a coffee-specific one. Are there ones that are threats to multiple kinds of crops?
There are. There are a number of pathogens that have wide host ranges. But most of them, like human diseases, are fairly specific to a small group of related organisms. But every once in a while, you come to one that can go to multiple different crops, and those cause even bigger problems. I study one called bacterial wilt that has hundreds of different hosts. Fortunately, it's not a problem in Wisconsin, but it is a big problem in the tropics, partly because of its broad host range.
Not a problem in Wisconsin. Was there an yet in parentheses there?
It would have to get a lot warmer in Wisconsin. Okay. So this is a tropical pathogen.
Gotcha.
It is a problem in Florida.
Do we need to rethink the way we do agriculture here at a fundamental level, make some basic changes to make us less prone to the disruption that these pathogens can cause, not just to our food, but as you were saying earlier, to our societies?
Oh, boy, that is one big question. Here's the tension. Yes, we know that large-scale industrial monoculture is not safe, that it leads us to dependence on single organisms and it makes us really vulnerable to specific diseases and insects. On the other hand, it's profitable. It feeds the world. There are people who make an argument that you can do small-scale organic or perennial agriculture and feed the world, but the numbers don't support that. So we have to find a middle ground. And some of this is going to involve genetic engineering technology. We need to use all the tools that we have.
And you were just in our last few moments, you were talking about wanting more diversity, say more kinds of bananas at our stores. Can we do that at a scale? And so I guess it's profitable enough for people to want to do it in a way that's going to make a difference.
I think so. If I ran the whole zoo, I would move subsidies from large-scale crops like the big five in the U.S., wheat, corn, soybeans, and so forth, and put instead subsidies on fruits and vegetables that would make it more profitable for growers to produce different kinds and, you know, in some ways make things better for the consumer, too. People need to eat more fruits and vegetables.
We'll leave it there. Caitlin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That's Caitlin Allen. She's the Ethel and O.N. Allen Professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at the UW-Madison. She joins us today to talk about a disease that's ruining banana crops in much of the world, now arriving in South America, and how similar diseases could make food items disappear or be threatened in the future.